You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Period poverty is generally considered to be the inability to access period products due to financial barriers. On average, Kiwis who menstruate are looking at spending nearly $16,000 on period products in their lifetime. First, I speak to Dr. Terry Fleming, one of the researchers in a Youth 19 survey that collected data around period poverty in schools. In Decile 1 schools, 21% of people who menstruate have missed school due to lack of access to period products, so I asked Dr. Fleming to elaborate on how period poverty perhaps not only creates inequalities, but exacerbates existing inequities.
So period poverty is a really interesting one because, one, we need to solve poverty, and that's a big deal and we don't want to distract from that. But two, period poverty is really specific and has quite an immediate effect, and it's kind of, you know, solvable. So period poverty, basically people not being able to afford menstrual products, and young menstruators who are at school often rely on parents being able to buy those or family members being able to buy those. They are incredibly expensive in New Zealand, more expensive than in a lot of other countries. And it exacerbates poverty because, of course, if you're not going to school, you miss out on education, which is the major breaker of the cycle of poverty. And if anyone has been a teacher or involved in classrooms, you know if people are missing a day or two each month, actually that's quite a significant amount of work, and it's quite hard to catch up. If you're missing content of a subject that's building up over time, like lots of the sciences and so on do, that can mean that people actually really seriously are impacted and start failing. So, yeah, it is a big equity issue.
And could you maybe comment on the concerning degree to which Māori and Pacifica people are disproportionately affected by period poverty, with 19% of Māori and Pacifica students having experienced period poverty compared to only 9% of European students?
It totally reflects the disparities and inequities in our society, that poverty is absolutely concentrated among Māori and Pacific people, and that we have reduced social mobility in our communities, and particularly in Māori and Pacific communities. So this utterly perpetuates cycles of disadvantage and social exclusion. You could say that not providing period products and allowing this to continue to exclude people from school is an example of institutional racism, really.
And how do you feel about the government's current rollout of free period products in selected schools? Do you see this as enough, or do you think there's perhaps value in maybe investing in a community-based approach?
I think it's a good start, and the, you know, we'd love to see it everywhere, but actually it is more in the higher deprivation schools, so it does make sense to start there. Ultimately, providing period products is a band-aid solution. If you can't afford period products, you probably can't afford them in the holidays as well, and that might impact on school leavers' ability to go to work or do other things. It might mean that if you have period poverty, you might also have deodorant poverty or shoe poverty. So, you know, my one reluctance about addressing period poverty on its own is that it's sort of a tip of an iceberg. We need to be having a decent basic income for everybody, obviously. But it's a good step in the right direction, and it's a good short-term changing and immediate problem. We absolutely need more of it across universities and schools and beyond.
So, yeah, obviously it does come back to a universal basic income issue, but also would you maybe like to see a government subsidy on period products, or a way in which they can figure out how to make those products, which are necessary, free for Kiwis who menstruate?
Yeah, it would be wonderful to do that. And there have been some initiatives. The Greens have done some work about menstrual cups and so on. And in fact, the Warehouse has put quite a lot of effort into finding and supplying considerably cheaper products. And then we have some charities like the Period Dignity Charity, the Period Place, and Kids Can have all done lots of work around supplying menstrual products. And, you know, we've got a big pulp and paper mill, which hasn't got enough work. It's been in the news today. So we could be, you know, looking at some opportunities there. Maybe instead of shovel-ready projects, we could look for some period poverty-ready projects. So absolutely we should be addressing this, and yes, you could make them free, or you could say let's take GST off them. Government has often been really reluctant to change that because, you know, we have a universal goods and services tax, but you either need to remove the cost or on these essential items, or you need to make sure that everybody's got enough money to purchase what they need.
To what degree do you find the effect of period stigma hinders the ability to advocate for period poverty?
I think that really is a big issue, and it's particularly important in our communities where talking about women's bodies and periods is less acceptable, and it affects the ability to do the community advocacy, but it also affects the ability for young menstruators to bring it up as a family, for them to try and prioritise purchasing them, for them to go and access them for school at school, even if they are available at school. The fact that it's sort of stigmatising or seen as embarrassing is a barrier, absolutely.
And just finally, the Scottish Government's programme of providing free menstrual products in schools was reported to have a positive impact on 84% of students. Mm. So do you believe that advocating for accessibility of period products is an issue of prioritising quality of life over capital gain?
I absolutely agree. I think, if we have freely available period products in schools and other settings where lots of people are, then it just makes life simpler and the ability to participate simpler, and helps us prevent the, you know, your very first question about essentially cycles of disadvantage. If your menstrual cycle becomes a blooming cycle of disadvantages, that's a really ridiculous. And, you know, some poverty and changing disadvantage takes really big picture, long-term sustained things. This is one where actually, you know, providing period products in schools is not a huge ask. It's not an incredibly expensive, difficult thing. We've seen it happening, as you say, in Scotland. There's places in Australia. There are some schools in New Zealand who are doing that already. It's a fix. You know, it's something that we can do.
Next up, I speak to Miranda Hitchings, co-founder of Dignity New Zealand, an organisation dedicated towards tackling and advocating for period poverty. I begin by asking her whether she believes the government's current rollout to provide period products in high schools is a sufficient advancement at a governmental level.
I personally feel like it's a really good start. When we started Dignity 5 years ago, we were having discussions with, a national government was in power, and we were having discussions with the Ministry of Women, and they weren't even really believing us that this was an issue. So to get to the point within kind of 5 years, 4 years, that not only are they acknowledging it, but they're putting a bit of money to it, that is bloody great. But I think that more could probably be done. So the funding that they've put aside is to support an estimated around 20% of students, which is really significant and really great, but that's not enough for everyone. And they're also going to be using an opt-in approach, which means that schools will have to opt into the system. And I think in Scotland, I can't remember which country it is, they also have an opt-in, or is it England? But they also have an opt-in approach, and it hasn't been working. So the issue with that is that schools are often unaware that their students are experiencing a lack of access, and assume that many don't because it's a difficult issue to discuss, and therefore don't opt into the program. So we really need a really big push from schools to opt in, to make the products available and then determine usage. Otherwise, my preference would be that it would just be freely available at all schools, so that those who need it can have access to it without having to have really difficult conversations, because that can also require bravery and is an unnecessary barrier. I think supporting schools is absolutely awesome, because as a as an intervention, it really helps. It has shown to help students stay in school and get education, and it has those long-term educational advantages to stop the cyclical nature of poverty. But period inequity and not having access to products doesn't just affect students, it affects people everywhere because it is a subset of poverty. And the government has said, both left and right, has said that they won't provide products to anybody outside of students. So, I mean, from my personal point of view, I think it would be really valuable to also provide it more broadly to people who need them from a government-led approach, but that will probably never happen.
Yeah, and so in terms of accessibility, do you think it would be reasonable to kind of hope that one day there might be some sort of government subsidy?
Well, I definitely think in terms of the scopes of the budget that they have, being able to provide period products to everyone is not a massive cost, and it would have really significant advantages from a gendered approach, because it would stop a barrier for people who menstruate, and we know that people who menstruate face more disadvantages than people who don't. So I think the money is worth it, because it would be tens of millions, but in the scheme of the government's billions and billions of dollars, it would have massive impacts for people to be able to participate in society. But it's, you know, that's a political will thing, and I think some people would see it as, some people's view is that we shouldn't be giving them out for free, even though people don't have access to it. Yeah.
Even though it's a necessity, it's not exactly a choice.
It's really interesting, some people's point of view on this.
Just moving on to sort of more of your advocacy work, when addressing period stigma, do you feel that that has a huge contribution to how difficult it is for people to feel comfortable advocating for period poverty?
Yeah, 100%, because, for instance, when this first started, prior to period inequity getting a lot of media attention, there was nothing on it. So when we first started Dignity, we started it at the point when we first heard about the fact that students weren't going to school because they didn't have access to products, and it was really shocking that that had happened. And that no one knew about it. And the reason that no one really knew about it until about five or so years ago in the mainstream media is because there was huge amounts of stigma around it. So there's stigma associated to having a period. There's stigma associated to being in poverty. And so it just wouldn't be discussed, and therefore no solution, was being made. So it's a huge, huge barrier. And so normalising talking about periods is really significant. But I do think that that's a space that's changing, which is really cool. Definitely 5 years ago, we would often have meetings with businesses because we have a buy one, give one approach to our business, where they purchase off us and we give equivalent product away. We'd often have meetings when no one would say the words period or tampon or pad, and somehow we'd get through the meeting just saying, where they would just be saying sanitary items, we wouldn't even discuss what we were talking about. And that's definitely changed over time, and people are more comfortable with it. But we still have a long way to go, and I can often forget that if I'm in a meeting and I'll just be, just saying words and tackling it head on.
Yeah, because when talking about the stigma behind it, do you think it's just kind of contributed to this idea that periods are something that, you know, people who menstruate just have to shut up and deal with in a way, and can't really reach out for support during that time?
Yeah, totally. I do think that's the case. I think you've hit the nail on the head there.
So how would you, how do you think we could continue to address the stigma behind periods?
I think the main thing that people can do is to talk about it, using the word period, using menstruate, talking about pads, tampons, moon cups, just and saying it without shame, because I think the more that people do that, particularly people who, particularly also men, if men do that, that would be awesome, because then it stops making it just an issue that women or people with periods have to deal with, and makes it mainstream for them. And I think that will be really huge, because that lets people feel less shame in talking about it, and feel less shame in saying I can't afford these products, or I have to make a decision between food or period products. It makes it less difficult. So I think that's definitely a huge thing that individuals can do, and then also supporting programs that donate to this issue as well, if you have the ability to, too.
Yeah, and I mean, a bit of a big question now, but on what scale do you find that period poverty contributes to inequities on a wider scale? So obviously, as we've sort of touched on, have people unable to go to work or school, which has huge negative impacts, but is there a kind of scale you could put this on to maybe make it easier for people to contextualise?
Oh, yes. The Youth 19 survey did some work on the number of people who are affected by period poverty, and I think they said that 1 in 10 students over the course of time at school had to miss out on school because of lack of access, or have had to miss out on school once a year because they haven't had period products. So that's really significant for people who menstruate. That's 10% of people. And there's a significantly higher proportion of those who are Māori and Pacifica. And so it is exacerbating vulnerabilities and failures within our system to create equality. And so, kind of as we touched on before, if you aren't able to, if you're bleeding and you don't have products, you're not going to want to go to school because that's embarrassing. And when that is, when that is people who, and that is a really large number of people, particularly those who are already in poverty, that has huge outcomes, because you can't, it's harder to, if this is happening every month, it's harder to catch up, and therefore it's harder to do well, and therefore it's harder to stay within the system and be a active participant within the community, exacerbating issues of meaningful work and also isolation and things like that. So I think it's such well money spent if the government wanted to do more than 20%, because it is something that doesn't actually cost that much in the scheme of things to support long-term quality of life for people.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.